watch yet?
No.
Come on, Adam.
Okay, welcome everyone to Knowledge on the Rift here. This is one of the first sessions where we're not going to be going over specific in-game details. We're going to be talking a little bit on a broader spectrum. And with that intro, the intro was the war songs from the League of Legends. You know, all their free music that they do, awesome. But this in particular was the Minnesota remix. And that ties in specifically with our guest today, William Chillingwalk.
Hey guys, how's it going?
So real quick, for the people that are new and are learning it, my name's Adam, the AMO. I'm the host here. And this is my own session on learning everything about League of Legends that I possibly can, covering everything and anything that deals with League. So one of the things that is out there via a Reddit post is a group called Learning Fives, and they specifically deal with helping coaches and players learning about fives in a in that type of atmosphere where they get together and play with teammates, and they have a coach that work them through this week. And one of the things I'm doing is to give them a shout out. So if you haven't seen their posts or haven't participated, you can in the future. They come out usually about 3-4 times a year. Just follow the Reddit. Usually, occasionally, they'll pop up as you see there. Or you can follow me. I will be posting their stuff about the next sessions that are coming up in the summer and fall. They're in session right now for the spring. It's too late to sign up. But we are doing this for the coaches, something that hopefully we can continue in where we help the coaches help the players. So I have my guest here today, like I said, is Will, and his Twitter is at Chillingwalk if you want to follow him along. And we're just going to kind of jump right in. And first, Will, tell us about yourself, how long you've been playing League, and rank. What's your rank at?
So yeah, guys, my name is William Chillingwalk. I'm from Stillwater, Minnesota, so up in the Great North. Just a little bit about me is that I started League of Legends way back in Season 1, way back where there's Against All Authority, there was a Chubby Yellowstar and all of that. I started because my friends were in the closed beta. It was back then it was a really ugly game at that time, and I didn't really enjoy it aesthetically, but my brothers got me into it, so that's when I started joining in. And now, currently, after 6 seasons, and now I am the coach/analyst for the University of Minnesota League of Legends organization. We're going to be competing in the Collegiate Championship next year, and hopefully we do well in that. And I'm also a shoutcaster as well under Caster's Caravan and Astrocyte Esports. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and definitely thank you a lot, Adam, for taking some time and giving me this opportunity to be a part of this podcast.
Yeah, so you've been playing League basically as long as I have. It's been a long ride. What's your favorite memory so far? Either you individually or pro scene or just some crazy thing that you've ever seen?
Yeah, so I think my favorite memory, prior to me being a part of the University of Minnesota organization, I attended Minnesota State University Moorhead all the way up north by Fargo. I was actually the vice president there and also the captain for the team there, but unfortunately I did have to take a leave of absence due to other opportunities that came up, so I did that. But to go back on a little road trip and to compete with my old friends and also compete with the League of Legends scene up there, my friends and I from down in the cities went up there to go and compete. And funny thing was that I think that the funniest memory and most memorable one was where it was where the patch where Cinderhulk jungler started coming up, and they started becoming super, super strong in the meta. And the funny thing was that this is also where Nala support just immediately started blowing up in the support role. And then pretty much the night before the tournament, I told my support, hey, do you want to play Nala support for the tournament real quick? He was like, sure. So we tested out one game, and I was like, so what do you think? He's like, let's do it. So essentially, we picked Nala support three times in a row. First picked it just in case anyone thought they had the idea as well. But after that, it was permaban against us the rest of the tournament. So that was like honestly a really funny thing because we never practiced it. And it was just something that I thought of because of the meta shift and the Cinder Hulk and Anomalous changes. So that was a lot of fun.
No, thanks. Playing in tournaments, it sounds like this was more of a LAN tournament then, or was this...
Yeah, it was a LAN tournament hosted by the North Dakota State University. It's a video game union. So they hosted that tournament. Definitely a lot of thanks for them as well. And so it was a lot of because up in the Fargo area, there's Concordia Moorhead, Minnesota State University Moorhead, and North Dakota State University. It's a tri-college area, so a lot of teams showed up, and it was a lot of fun. Just landed out, and we won first place, so that was a great thing.
Well, there you go. Congratulations. Talking about competing, the real question, since you're an NA, TSM or CLG?
Ooh. You know, I'm always a TSM fanboy, down to my core. Always a TSM fanboy. It's actually really funny because while coaching and while being captain, I actually enjoy CLG's strategic diversity and then their mindset going into the game. But then I just enjoy TSM and their personalities and how they represent their brand versus how CLG does. So it's really interesting how, in regards to how I play, how I view both organizations.
Well, as a CLG fan, I can say you and Doublelift can hang out in the trash together.
Ooh, shots fired. Shots fired.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully you're from Minnesota, so you know how to at least, you know, drive a car. So.
Hey, man. We got that Minnesota nice. It's all good. It's all good. It's okay. You know, just come up here, get some hot dishes. It's all good.
Of the 10,000 lakes, how many have you swam in?
I have swam in, oh my God, like four. I fished in like 15 of them, but I've only swam in like four and like, you know, jumped in.
Okay. Well, do you ice skate then?
You know what's funny? I actually like didn't really actually get into hockey. Hockey's like a really big sport up here, but I didn't really enjoy it. It's not my cup of tea. I'm actually a basketball and football kind of person, so that's what I like to do. But yeah, hockey and all of that, going on skates and throwing them pucks, I'm not a fan of.
Well, bringing it slightly back to the league, what's your favorite champion and or your favorite champion skin?
Okay.
Do you have a favorite combo or?
Yeah. So, my favorite champion. So this is way back in season 1, but back then I played Kassadin. Played Kassadin Midlane. That was the first champion I ever mained. First champion I ever loved. So, still always in my pocket to pull out, and definitely one of my favorites. However, favorite skin. I definitely enjoy the Cosmic Reaver skin that just came out. That's actually I think it's a really sexy skin, and you know, super clean. I definitely enjoy it. Another one I like to play is Zed. He's also one of my favorite picks, and I also like to play the Project Zed skin because those two skins are just phenomenal.
No, yeah, and so as I was saying, this is another episode. So I will. Let's see here. Who's my favorite one of the day? It's probably gonna have to be Meowkai.
Meowkai.
And. Kitty's thrown everywhere, so I think that's probably been my favorite skins that's came out this year so far. So awesome. I'd rather enjoy watching the little kitties get thrown.
So. nice.
So tell us a little bit more about this organization you're with up at your university.
So yeah, so at the University of Minnesota League of Legends, it was actually started back then when League was actually pretty big, but then I think there's been like a couple of years now since it's been on hiatus. But this new president, I think his name is Adam Tao. He essentially restarted this organization, trying to get people coming back in to League of Legends, starting to host these tournaments. The most recent tournament we ran was for GopherCon, so that was a lot of fun. And yeah, that's pretty much what the organization does. We meet every Wednesdays. Don't know about this coming year. We may meet Wednesdays again, but maybe not, depending on how schedules fit for everyone. But yeah, now we're just trying to bring it back up to speed, try and make sure we get maintain the competition up at League of Legends, competition up in the University of Minnesota, and also make sure it's fun and you know, just have a blast. You know, a lot of people like to you know, do some cosplays, and a lot of people like to theory craft, so definitely a place that's really open and a place that's really fun to hang out with. And I think just recently I think Adam started doing this kind of this Minnesota league series. So what it is that we're going to be competing between our University of Minnesota against other University of Minnesota campuses, such as Moorhead, my old campus, Duluth, I think St. Cloud as well, Morris, and all of that. So trying to contact all those league organizations across the Minnesota area and see if they want to participate. And essentially, going to be like LCS once a week, compete, maybe best of ones. Don't know if we have time for best of twos, but yeah, pretty much that's going to be how it rolls.
So as going about this, you said a little bit there that you help coach and maybe do some analyst work. Or is this your top team then up at Minnesota that you work for or work with?
Yep, this is my top team that I'm working with right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is a student-run organization. This isn't like Roger Morris where those kids are getting scholarships yet, right?
Oh, God, I wish you – no. Nope, it's just student-run. I wish University of Minnesota would jump on the bagwagon and start sponsoring and, you know, giving these kids some scholarships, but nope, not yet. But yeah, student-run, everything.
So since it's student-run and it's not governed by the university on you know, things and the rules that they implement – what's your average week like looking for these players?
Average week in regards to like practicing and coaching?
Yeah, like as in quarters of practice or like obviously they all have different majors and, mm-hmm. and that type of stuff. But like kind of like do you have like set times each week or and then how do you go about like, you know, going with this, their schedules?
Yeah, so what we do is that we have them play roughly hopefully five games a week. It's up to them when they want to do it. But then in regards to scheduling, you know, we're actually very flexible. We all have classes. We all have that. We try and accommodate. Most of the time, we try and do it on the weekends just because everyone's free. Just do it during the day. So you have your nights free. And then, you know, that's usually how we approach it. And when we do that, usually I do a co-coach / analyst with another friend of mine. So we're sitting there. We're running through picks and bans. We're making sure that these students have the right mentality and all of that. But also, after that, we will do VOD reviews. We would watch the game and analyze what happened and what we could have done, what we should have done better, and how can we fix it, and then run through all those basics. So that's what we usually do week to week, and then eventually, once that Minnesota League series comes kicking, then we're going to be competing and scrimming as well.
So this is going to be like kind of a more full blown. All semester thing or 2 months?
Yeah, I think according to our president, I think he's going to be. I feel like he's going to be aiming for the first semester. So, pretty sure it's going to be the entire semester, and then there's going to be a big old championship. We'll try to get it streamed out, get some sponsors, some production value, and all of that. So, mm-hmm.
I'm not as familiar with the Minnesota's you know where they're ranking. These are probably. Players in the high diamond levels, maybe a master tier sprinkled in and out, right?
I'm trying to remember the roster. I think we have one master play, and then the rest are all high diamonds. So that's our list right now. But you know, new students coming in, new students wanting to try out. I'm open for it. There's more young talent. I'd rather develop that and go from there.
So while you're working particular with this group of five players is the lead team, and your organization does work with any player, right? Any player that wants to be, you know, come and join the club can come and get advice from you or let's say another one of these players, correct?
Yeah, we're super open. They can always, you know, there's always a bunch of theory craft and there's always a bunch of tips for young new players or people just getting into the club.
So since, you know, practicing during the school semester because of classes can be kind of difficult, what do you do when you actually do, let's say, get in a three-hour block? Is that how long an average, like if you get a nice session going, is that about how long it lasts or do you get a little bit more time?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, once we get our scrim partners ready from the other campuses and other scrim teams, maybe across the nation, hopefully we can just run best of just play three games, hopefully, just three games, or if not, just run two games and also just do some VOD analysis after that. That's the ideal way of doing it and discussion after that.
So when you're doing VOD analysis, you've talked about it a couple times. Do you have all five players in the same room, or are you guys kind of like scattered throughout campus? So you're using different tools to look at the VODs.
So how VOD reviews work is that usually how it works is that if it's if we are not playing all together, for example, if the ranked five team wanted to practice on a Monday night or a Wednesday night, then what the coach and I would do is that we would have them play by themselves, handle their own pick and ban, but then we would review it when we have the time. We would review it and then bring it up to speed when it hits the weekend. And once it hits the weekend, or once all of us are playing together, then what we would do after that is we would play our games and then do our VOD review of everything together, and also discuss with them prior to that on the games they played, not when we're all together, the games they played by themselves. We would write notes. We have this Google spreadsheet that we would put take notes on and type them what they should work on, what they need to improve on, what we noticed as coaches / analysts of the faults of what they did, micro and macro sense.
So, I mean, we can get into the kind of the nitty-gritties here of specifically what you're looking for. So what exactly are you looking for? Are you looking for something different from each person? Is it something that you've communicated them? So, like, you're talking about to your support specifically about maybe warding it this way, or like kind of what things are you looking for?
Mainly the thing I'm looking for is actually these players are all high solo queue players already, so I don't really need to expect them in regards to macro play and all of that. The main thing I would highlight is just playing the map right and utilizing rotations and playing with the team. Sometimes, you know, sometimes when you guys play dynamic queue, it's kind of like scrims. You just have fun. You just do whatever you want, and then it's not that valuable. So the main thing I would say is what we do prior to that is we would target one thing or two things that we would like to focus on in these kind of games, and then emphasize that, and then start building that off from there while also maintaining our macro play.
So when you're specifically breaking down each week or each session, individual things that you're going to key on to help them improve in certain areas?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if let's say you're talking about just as off topic, just dragon control, mm-hmm. How would you go about approaching to talk to your team about dragon control and then looking at what they did and maybe give an example of like how you would critique that?
So there's one example where, so there's an example of a game I remember I watched back then where they were playing a very skirmishing comp. So, and dragon control wise, it's their comp was more mainly win lane, win game. So, but then what they did was that the bot lane kind of lost pretty heavily. In regards to dragon control at that point, you know, our bottom lane turret was taken. We lost that side of the map. So in order to gain that side back, what we would do is we'd have to force either mid lane to pressure the mid lane turret to open up the map even better for us, or utilize TP plays while also placing defensive wards on the bottom side of the map. And then dragon control, it's depending on what the dragon was, it all depends if it was if the value was okay. Usually on fire dragons, I would say try to fight for it. Water dragons probably the same, but when it comes to earth and air, I would say, you know, don't really fight for it. Just look for a better trade, such as a turret, or such as better map pressure, or, you know, or looking for picks, something like that. Only if it's free, take it. But if we can't take it, it's okay because it's not a valuable dragon at that time. So that's usually how it works. You know, set up the proper vision. Make sure we have vision of their jungle if you can. After putting in the defensive line, and then also keeping an eye on where their jungler is.
So these are all things that we're talking about here of setting up a good plan to control a theoretical objective such as dragon, mm-hmm. and how you can go about it. The execution though, as you're being focused towards a week, say dragon control, what are you expecting? How do you expect your players to communicate in game to talk about the things you talked about, like placing the wards and realizing what to give up or if it's free or not?
So the main thing in regards to noticing if dragon is free is mainly identifying where the jungler is, or also knowing if your 3-on-3 or 4v4 is stronger. Bot lane likes to pick a winning lane most of the time. Our mid lane plays mainly control mages. Sometimes he'll pick some assassins as well. But how we set it up is that the way to approach dragon is mainly to, of course, it's always getting vision first. But it all depends on how you guys open up the map, right? If mid lane manages to take out mid lane turret first, it opens up the map a lot easier. It allows you to play the map a lot better in regards to putting vision in the bot side, putting vision in the top side. And when that happens, it also allows your jungler to go into the enemy jungle, either spot him out, place more wards, and also take some camps. So a strategy of what you can do, and sometimes what I can tell my team to do, is where you can take the entire bottom side of the camp, and as a jungler, depending on what you want to do, is you can either try and farm topside, be a little bit greedy. But then what you do is if you farm topside and it's obvious of where he is, then that's theoretically a free dragon, because he's farming topside. It's going to be later for him to rotate. And based on what lane is winning or what lane has been taken, what tower has been taken, should be easy to take. That's when you know it's free. In regards to trading dragons, you just have to look at the map. You just have to think about what you're trading for and what dragon it is and if it's worth it. You have to look at the team comp of yours versus theirs. Do you depend on dragon versus theirs? At this point, dragon is pretty valuable at this stage, because fire and water are probably the most valuable. Air is still very weak. It's okay. It's actually really strong if you're winning, because it allows you to rotate more. If you're losing, air dragon isn't as valuable though. And then Earth Dragon is also better when you're winning as well, or if you're playing a siege comp. So air and earth are not that valuable unless you're winning, while water and fire are always valuable no matter what. So when playing this out, you have to think about, when in regards to trading, think about who's winning, who's losing, team comp, do you need that dragon, is there a better trade? First dragon, depending on what dragon it is, trading first dragon for another dragon is just fine. So those are the strategies that I like to implement and I like to utilize when it comes to getting dragon control, knowing when to trade and knowing when not to trade and knowing when to give it up.
So you're obviously, the team is communicating the game plan through the game, and you're sitting on the outside, either listening in or just watching it. So what expectations do you have of the communication of your players? Do you have a shot caller? Do you have a committee? Do you have you do this type of role, and then another person does a different type of calling for another type of situation?
Yeah, so right now we still are working on communication, but what I would like to do is that each lane can keeps track of, each role can keeps track of their mirrored opponent's summoner spell, so the support will keep track of the support flash and ignite and all of that, while top lane keeps track of top lane summoner spells. That puts responsibility on everyone else. In regards to shot calling, it's more of a collective. However, I would like to put someone as a dedicated shot caller in regards to go make it or break it, either go or don't go. So, because sometimes when someone isn't that strong in regards to making a final decision, pulling the trigger, then that can create a lot of lag between the team, a lot of miscommunication in regards to who wants to go and who doesn't want to go. So that's something that I'm actually planning to work on with the team in regards to communication, because sometimes I see my team kind of fluster or miscommunicate in regards to which way are we running away, which way are we moving, and all of that, and what are we looking for in regards to starting off a fight, who's leading off, and all of that. So hopefully I'll eventually have a dedicated shot caller, or someone who, or primary and a secondary shot caller, someone who handles a macro game, or someone who handles setting up team fights and all of that. So it's all based on what, trying to get a sense of the communication of what our team members want to play as communication moves forward.
So, I know we're just getting into the summer here, and it's maybe something, but what goals or ideas do you have to improve the communication of your team? Do you have, like, exercises you want to try or that you have done to help improve that communication?
It's actually really hard to, from my personal experience on a team and as a coach / analyst, it's kind of hard to improve communication, because the thing is that first off, all the players need to trust each other in regards to who's making the call. And then in the early game, it should always be the most vocal should always be the jungler and or the bottom lane at the same time. Usually the jungler should be the most vocal. Laner should feed to the jungler, summoner spells, wards, who's MIA, all that. While laners, they don't really need to say anything other than to let someone know that someone's MIA, let someone know that there's flashes down, anything like that. In regards to improving communication, though, the main part, the hard part in regards to improving communication is when it hits the late game, and also when you're behind. When you're behind as a shot caller or someone who's trying to play out the macro game, you have to figure out what you have to do to get back into the game, and that puts a toll on your mentality because you're losing, your teammates are behind. But then as a shot caller or as a person who's making all these decisions, you have to decide what steps you have to take to get back in. So either we have to ward their bottom side, and if we see them scrambling bottom side, we fight that no matter what. Or if you're looking for a super strong initiation or a flank or a TP play like that. So these are, in regards to improving those communications, that just comes with experience. And that just comes with building trust in between teammates. And that's the main thing I would say. Other than that, in the early game, improving communication in the early game is very easy because you just have to let everyone know that laners feed information to the jungler. Bottom lane can communicate between each other, and then support can feed information to the jungler as well. And another main thing is that not be extremely negative while on comms. You don't want to say like, oh shit, I fucked up, or you'd be like, oh god, I'm gonna die. You just be like, you just have to accept it. You're like, I died. All right, cool, not a problem. And then your team has to be motivated enough to make sure you're staying positive, make sure your head is still in the game, but nothing too critical, nothing too toxic in a way where it's questioning someone's motives or someone's play or someone's decision making. Because once that happens, trust can get broken and synergy can start to break between the players.
So it sounds like a lot of the communication is what you're putting back on what it is you're calling it trust, the ability for one player to rely on the other four players on the team to do their job individually and to do their job as a teammate and to gel together as a cohesive unit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That seems extremely difficult.
Yeah, trust on it. In my opinion, trust is actually trust and synergy. I feel like it's kind of like when you look at, for example, if you look at an example of LCS play teams, you look at COG now and you look at TSM now. COG immediately had probably like the best synergy in regards to that. It also, if you look at Immortals too, when that team came out, all of them immediately clicked, and all of them immediately knew each other's capabilities and trusted each other to get out of a sticky situation. Where you look at TSM, their commission is a little bit broken. They're all star players, but because they're all star players, it's kind of hard to know who to trust, know who to gauge, how to gauge them, and all of that. And also, if you look at COG as well, COG has, if you look at their gameplay, they trust the calls, they trust what to do, they understand the game plan and how to play it out. So that's why I feel like trust in throughout communication is really a big important thing, because if you guys don't like each other, you guys don't trust each other, you guys don't synergize at all, then either one of you guys has to go, or you guys need to wrap it up and compromise and fix it, because animosity between players isn't going to improve anything at all.
So what have you... Building this trust is great for in-game synergy and to work on building it. Have you tried anything outside of game to build that trust, or some people call it camaraderie, between the players?
There's always the times where you just guys or where the players just go out, they hang out, they have fun outside of game. They just socialize with each other and all of that. It works. It definitely secures like the first layer of building synergy and building trust. However, the thing is that can be great and all, but once you guys enter game and you guys don't have synergy, you guys don't understand each other's capabilities, that's where it can also falter. Because one of you guys can be like, hey man, I thought you can do this. You're like, nope, I cannot. I am sorry. I was low, had no mana, and was flashless. So sorry, man. Couldn't help you out. And those are the things in game I feel like is more important. You can socialize. Socializing and being friends and all that is great and all, but when you guys enter a game and you guys don't have that kind of connection in game, that can still falter and change the results of winning it or losing.
Now you're working with a particular team of, like we said, four diamond players and a master. That these players have mechanics that are fairly high ceiling or high potential. I mean, what would you say to someone who's running like a team of five silver players, like how to improve their communication, because those players are not going to be able to, do the Lee Sin, board hop, flash, kick, to get a pick. Like, that's a very tiny specific example. But, how would you improve the communication of people whose mechanics are not able to meet the appropriate level? The level of real high standard.
Honestly, in regards to playing rank 5 silvers and rank 5 platinum and anything higher, at that point, mechanics is great and all. Mechanics allows you to 1v1, allows you to 2v2, and allows you to play skirmishes a lot better. But in regards to a full-on 5s-on-5s, you don't win based off just pure mechanics. You don't win based off all of that. It's a good thing to have, sure. But in regards to improving communication and improving all that versus silver players, it's just about making sure everyone is on the same page and making sure that you guys understand what to do in the next step, because you can have a bunch of diamond players who are just screwing around and they don't know what to do. They're just winning the lane and all of that. But then you can also have a bunch of silver players who understand the game plan, understand what they want to achieve, and understand how to approach it and still win, because previously I've seen silver players do this as well. Just a bunch of silver players who understand each other, extremely synergized, versus a bunch of high elo diamond players who are just, either one trick ponies or they just want to screw around or something like that. It's all about synergy and communication and focusing on what the next step is in game. So that's what I would say if you're coaching lower elo teams, that in these teams it's not about pure mechanical skill. It's about playing to your team comp, playing to your win conditions, and playing the macro game.
And it's the point of getting everyone to be basically on the same page. Mm-hmm. You said you play basketball and you like basketball. When a team gets a steal and runs down the court with the ball, mm-hmm. everyone knows what everyone else is going to do in the next, in basketball, the court's relatively short and pros are fast. So 5 to 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
In League, how do you get your team to be on the same page so everyone knows kind of what everyone is basically going to be doing in the next, let's say, 3 to 5 minutes? Because that's how far ahead you should be thinking, unless, you're in Korea, then it's 10 minutes ahead to kind of, plan your way around.
So there are a lot of factors when it comes to setting up for all of that, because there's a lot of in-game things that happen at the time that can change your game plan. There's a lot of things that can alter it and make it go quicker. So in regards to estimating 3 to 5 minutes, it's extremely hard. And at that point, you have to look at your team comp, their team comp, who's winning individually, item builds, power spikes, level sixes, especially when level six starts coming around. That's where fights start to break out left and right. Teleportation, TPs, if anyone's running globals, setting all that up, pre-warding, jungle support synergy, when to roam, when to back. And setting these things up is in my opinion, it can work. It's also really hard, though, because there's a lot of certain steps that you have to take in regards to all that. So, for example, if your comp is Corki mid, top lane Maokai, or top lane Poppy, jungle is Kindred or Graves, and then you have a Lucian AD carry and a Alistar support, right? So if you look at that, it's a triple AD comp, Corki with more AP damage than AD damage. If you look at those three comps, you guys can fight. So looking at this, you have your primary initiation with Maokai and Alistar. You have your two frontline. Then you have Graves as a depending on how the jungler wants to build, he can build Bruiser or he can build full-on damage. You have Corki, who has high poke, a lot of magic damage with him. And you have Lucian, who's a really strong skirmisher. And with the new build, you have Korean, Yomu's, Ghostblade, and Black Cleaver. But the great thing about these three is that they're really good at taking out turrets, because you have the Maokai. You have the Maokai under the turret. You have Alistar to stop flanks and all that. And then you also have the triple ADs, who are at a range and also scale well because they're building attack damage and taking out turrets. So that's what... And in regards to that, you have to look at the item spikes. When does Lucian come online? When does Corki come online? When does Graves come online? And then when is Maokai okay to stay under turret and take damage and still be okay? And if not that, can Alistar do that with ultimate? Figuring out that time and knowing when to siege and knowing when to ward and warding up to take those sieges is very crucial, because you have to keep communication clear. Like, hey, I'm Corki. I'm going to hit Triforce soon. Triforce in like 300 gold. Lucian, all right, cool. I have Yomu's in 300 gold, and then Graves, great. I'm gonna have my skirmisher saber and the red enchantment. While Maokai has to be like, hey man, I have armor set, can take a couple turret shots, and then Alistar, as long as I'm level 6, I should be fine. So then when you look at that, that's your game plan. Then you want to siege up to your turret. How to siege up to your turret? You want to ward. Place vision around that turret. Make sure your flanks are good. You guys can also team fight, though, if anything were to happen, because you have Maokai and Alistar. And then from there, you have to look at the enemy team comp and what their win conditions are. So, for example, if you have that's your 5, and for example, their enemy 5 is a Lissandra mid, let's see here, Poppy top lane, Nidalee jungle, Ezreal AD carry, and Janna support. So yeah, the Janna for disengage, Janna for peeling, so can definitely get rid of the Alistar and Maokai pretty well if they were to engage. You also have the Lissandra, and you have the Nidalee, so there's really strong flankers, and they can set someone up in a stun and force a fight really quick. And then who else do you have? Then you have Poppy can also fight. Poppy can also ulti the backline if there's a free opening. If she knocks one of the AD carries or two of the AD carries out of the fight, it's a huge loss in DPS. And then then you have to look at let's see here, who am I missing?
You had Ezreal.
And Ezreal. So then Ezreal can poke and Ezreal can do decent and Ezreal can poke. Ezreal can decently wave clear with Qs if he has Iceborne and also has ultimate. And he also has a lot of mobility, so it's a little bit harder to catch. The only person who can only catch him is Maokai. But then you also have the Janna for peel and kit and split the team up. So that's the thing. If your team of fives try to attempt a siege, they can always try and flank with Nidalee and Lissandra. Poke with Ezreal slash wave clear with Ezreal with True Shot Barrage, or Lissandra can also wave clear with Qs and E's as well. Then you have Janna Tornadoes to stop the siege, to help the turret take it, and then you also have Poppy flank as well, if Poppy were to flank and knock someone out of the team fight or knock a tank out as well. So that's, you have to look at these kind of things and understand when you're online, and also at that point then you have to look at their item spikes and when they are online. Because if they're online before you are, it's going to be a little bit harder. Or if they are online the same time you are, then essentially that's going to be a skill matchup and how you guys execute. So those are like all the things that can happen in regards to thinking of the next 3 to 5 minutes in regards to all of that.
No, yeah, that's one of the things. The fives is, you know, just greatly complicates things, and people call it chess as a video game, because how many different moving parts and pieces there can and will be can get overwhelming at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
We've talked a lot about the communication and the teamwork as fives. Do you then do little individual sessions with each of the players where they can better get to know like their own power spikes on their champions and their lane opponent, where if you were that Cork and you're go, hey, you know, Lissandra just picked up Abyssal and Zhonya's, like, that's a huge power spike. As a Corki mid, I would want to know that that's a huge power spike for Lissandra.
I wouldn't say individually. I wouldn't say individually. I would approach them and tell them when your power spike is and when their power spike is, because knowing your opponent is just fine in regards to that. It's where your team has to communicate and let everyone else know that, hey, I'm Corki. I have my Triforce. My power spike is going to be, it's later on. My Triforce is going to be a little bit down now. I can still poke. I can still poke people out of the fight. But then there's Lysandra. Like I said, she has Abyssal. She has Hourglass. If she gets into the fight, she can be very scary. So we have to watch out for that. That point, you just have to look at the team and understand, like, even if she is at a power spike, can that trump another? Can that trump our team and how we're playing? So individually, I would say no, but as a team, you have to identify the entire team's power spike, and that's where it becomes that's where another key part about communication is, where identify your own and identify theirs.
So you're focused on the team concept, on the large picture, and mm-hmm. and getting the people, the players, to work together, and to trust another, and to, you know, be that cohesive unit and to and play the game appropriately and obviously win. What have you found was something that was surprisingly easy as you've gone about this? Like something that you were like, that you, I don't know, if maybe you just like were thinking about it one day and something just clicked, or what did you find that you found came easy in the situation? Because after this, I'm going to go hard.
Well, can you just go and elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah. So like, in my experience, when I first started coaching football, because mm-hmm. that's what my main background is, I mm-hmm. found it really easy during practice to let the kids make mistakes.
Okay.
Because it's practice, right? They are there to learn to get better. Mm-hmm. If making a mistake in practice, I never understood why coaches would get super mad during practice about kids making a mistake, if it's their, like, you know, obviously if they've made the same mistake 100 times and you tell them every single day you're supposed to step with your left foot first and they keep stepping with their right, that's one thing. But if it's like a kid's just having a bad day and he made a mistake, some coaches just flip out. I always found myself really easy, just like, hey, grab the kid, be like, hey, what'd you do wrong? Do this. Like, it's something that came really easy to me. As a result, the kids related to me because they're like, you don't yell at us at practice. I'm like, practice is for you to learn. Game time was a different situation. That's when you execute. That's the test. That's, you know, where you succeed or fail, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example I found easy. Or something I found hard was some things that some kids, I would explain something and I'd use like a metaphor or slogan or, you know, an analogy, and some kids just didn't get it. And I just like, what do you mean you don't get it? This is very simple. And then I'd try a different one and they just didn't get it. And I'm like, okay, I'm just not reaching this kid.
I would say one thing that came really easy in regards to identifying motivation and identifying when players are off task or when players are not feeling the mood. The main thing with League is that you know, of course you have your collegiate teams and you have all that. The hard part is when it comes to practice, you have to understand like what you're playing for. For example, when it comes to like football, all these games coming up, you know what you're playing for, you know who your opponent is and all of that. The hard part is where you have to identify what you are playing for because once you have a competition lined up, you know what you're playing for, you know what your competition is, and you know why you want to win. The hard part is maintaining that motivation when there isn't any competition, because that's where, you know, practice can get lazy. Practice, you know, all these patches are going to be changing. What's the point of learning these champions when we're not going to be playing in this kind of patch or all these kind of things? So at this time, this is where coaches and the team starts getting creative in regards to coming up with comps and compositions to either scrim or practice as, and then understanding the power spike and that play style, such as, for example, our team is a very full on fives team fight oriented, skirmish oriented. They didn't really like to play the 1-3-1. They like to play the 1-4. They don't like to have a Zier in the mid lane as much. They don't like to play the 1-1-3 and all that. But sometimes sometimes if they want to think about it, they can run like the submarine comp where you run Evelynn or Twitch with Shen, and then Shen just essentially jumps on someone when they're invisible, or like Rengar, or you can also run the protected AD carry comp and all of that. So this is where you have to find scrim partners and then just start playing this comp over and over again, or even just keep on practicing dynamic queue, because this will build the idea of how to play with this comp and what does it take to succeed, and also identifying when this comp fails as well. So that's the thing I found easy in regards to keeping motivation, because you can't, in my opinion, you can't keep on having practice when there's no goal, because that's just bad practice. You don't know what your goal is. You have to set that goal first, and then you can start practicing for it. And that's something that I learned pretty easily in regards to all of that.
Oh yeah, so that sounds like a great tip and a thing to look at. Is we talked earlier that even in your individual sessions, you had a goal or strategic mind for that lesson set out at the very beginning, and then as the lesson progressed, and as you said, time progressed. If you're practicing for a tournament, you were focusing on something specific, and as you got there, it made it easier, it made the motivation easier, it made the drive easier, the ability for the players to want to learn and adapt and pay attention really allowed for the best improvement.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So have you done anything that just totally failed? Like either a comp, or if you're like, hey guys, we should do this, or like, I don't know, if you talked about trust a lot, did you like, hey, we should do trust falls, and the kid got dropped and broke his nose or something?
Something that failed. Yeah, there was actually a time where I wanted to attempt something. This is actually when I was on a team at Moorhead, but this is where I wanted to test something out, and this is just me. This is actually me starting as a player and also getting into the captain role and essentially running practice and all that. But what I did was I had my team turn off all voice comms, so like we didn't hear anyone at all. We wrote things through chat. We wrote things through ping and all of that. And for me, I thought that it would build synergy, or it'll build like tendencies and understand how people play. But after that exercise, I don't like running it ever again, just because it's you're kind of like hindering something that you can improve on, because now, I like to keep voice comms on, and that was pretty much a pretty big fail for me as a player and as a captain when running that practice. It wasn't really that effective.
That's interesting, because I think, at the very top level, you have different teams like in EU where everyone speaks broken English and relies specifically on pings. But I think that they would have to spend so much of their prep time on setting that game plan, that goals that we talked about, and that trust of when I do like the pings of like danger, 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 or like, missing, or like help me, help me, help me, that someone's actually going to all be on the same page with a non-verbal communication, right? And whereas video games and five players playing together can rely so much more on verbal.
For me, in regards to that, yeah, European, Chinese teams where they have Koreans and Chinese people, they don't speak the same language and all that. I think the reason why they work well is because I feel like they. I'm not too sure. I don't have my data, of course, but. I think another thing I think we have to include is that they've been playing the game together for a long time. They understand each other's dynamics, and also those are like the basic things, understanding each other's tendencies and all that. But in regards to like communicating like big game scopes, communicating like what we have to do, like moving players around the map and all that, I think from my opinion that's hard, because if these five are speaking the same language, and you're saying, "Hey, we're going starting the fight is on you, bro. You're playing Malphite. You're starting the fight, and when you go, we're all gonna follow you." All right, cool. So then, in regards to that though, if none of you guys can speak the same language or like understand what's going to happen, then it's kind of like you just have to assume that person understands that he's pulling the trigger, and when that trigger is pulled, we all fight. So it's kind of like a hindrance. It does build tendencies and it does build like understanding these little nuanced things and play style a lot better. But then you're also cutting off a main thing in regards to fives, and that's team communication. Because if you guys can't verbally communicate, you guys can still ping and all that, but if you guys can't verbally communicate like what's gonna be the setup, how the fight's gonna be, when I call for TP and or all these little things, then I feel like it's a lot harder. Because I can ping you all the time, but then visual cues in regards to voice cues are a little bit slower, and those are some things that can happen in a game.
So if you had to do a top five of like tips or top three things that you've learned or would impart on someone that's coaching a team of fives that's going to do it for the first time, what would be your three biggest, like, they can be either you must do this or you should never do this or what, but would your top three things to tell them?
Okay. One thing I would say is that as a coach, I think the number one thing is that you have to have respect for the player. You have to have respect from the players and for the players. If you don't respect them, they're not going to respect you. And at that point, it doesn't create trust and it doesn't create synergy between the coach, the coaching staff, and then the team. Two is sometimes as a coach, you may not fit for the team, and that's okay. Your coaching methods may not fit for the team, and your coaching methods can go for someone else. That's been evident in all the sports where coaches have moved on to different teams, but then they could have been a world-class coach with that team, but then drop horrendously with another team because of their coaching style and how it doesn't mesh well with the teammates. Three is, I would say, so I said respect from the players and respect and getting respect from them. One is it's okay if you don't mesh with them and you can find a new team. And then three is, I would say that three in regards to coaching is that, you know, you have to focus as much as in-game gameplay as much as out-of-game team building. So running team building activities outside of the game, running just fun activities that, you know, helps build things. Those are all equal as well. Those are the main three things I would say in regards to, comes to coaching, because you can't always be an in-game coach, because what happens when they're outside of game? They might just goof off, or like they might not be building synergy, or they may be talking. They might not be respecting another player as much, and all that. So that's what I would say.
No, okay, that's those are, you know, great things that we can all work on, mm-hmm. Even in ourselves. Just you know, gaining the respect of others while giving them respect, mm-hmm. realizing that not everything can go your way, mm-hmm. and all making sure that the respect is given between everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So a self-reflection, mm-hmm. As well as making sure that, you know, others aren't put in a position where their respect isn't being given to them. So we're reaching almost an hour here. We could probably go much longer and talk about, you know, nitty gritty details. About do you, you know, how do you feel about, you know, a second, you know, middle tower, the second row,
mm-hmm.
bot lane versus on the red side versus the blue side, mm-hmm. and all that, which may be for another time. But
yeah.
Real quick, once again, you can follow this series here. We'll be doing many more of these, you know, episodes or VODs. I've already got one on the trinkets. I got another one coming up later tonight on warding non-trinkets. And then we'll be, you know, I have other people in process of getting lined up for many other different topics. But if you want to hit up Will, if you have any questions, or let's say you're going to be going to be a gopher up in Minnesota and you just want to be part of the their league community up there, or maybe you go to a different school and you want to make sure your school is participating in their tournament, where can they reach you at, Will?
Yeah, they can reach me on LOL Coaching. You just look me up on Chilling Walk. You can also Follow me on Twitter at ChillingWalk as well. And yeah, if you want, you could definitely just add. You could definitely just privately message me on those two things, and I'll definitely help you out as best as I can. You can also go to the trying to remember the website. There's a website for the League of Legends campus. Just gotta look it up though. But yeah, if you go just go to the uofm.edu and you go to schools and organizations, you can definitely just look up the League of Legends organization from there through all of that. So those are the main things I would say in regards to contacting me, contacting the university on getting in, or contacting just competing or scrimming with us and all of that. So pretty much.
Okay, so my final tip of the day is, if you are at a university, go out, find someone at your school that plays League. Dynamic Queue allows now for League to be played with friends and a group of people much more easier than it did with the previous solo queue. A lot of universities now do have these organizations where they do have their own tournaments, or they have, you know, intercollegiate school tournaments with programs and people like Will here. So go out and be a part of that. Also, shout out to the Learning Fives. As they continue their process across the United States and Europe, in Canada, I guess it's just all of NA, where they do, you know, specifically team coaching for, you know, a month, so every, you know, people can get better. You learn as you coach as well. So if you take it from that perspective. With nothing else, we're just gonna end it here then with the end of the war songs, and have a good day.